If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings from the divine light of the one divine beloved. Tonight our seminar topic is true seeing is the gaze of God. And you're listening to Commander Lady Athena, and this is Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So let's take a deep breath and call yourself forward into your true seer. That one behind your eyeballs that can either see truly from the gaze of God or that projects a world of distortion and vengeance. The seer is who you truly are. The projector is who you've never been, but have mistakenly identified as yourself. So tonight we take again another journey into the reality of the divine, that which is your true self, forever unmarred, forever unchanged by its passage through seemingly time, space, dimensionality, and this appearance we call the body. This body, which is designed for one purpose, to be a conduit, an extension of the divine love, wisdom, creative intelligence, and vision of God. So, let's look at this precious commodity that we have of sight. I was thinking about it tonight, and I thought, you know, the eye is the form that light assumes in the physical body. The sacred geometry for the eye and the sacred geometry for light are identical, and this applies to all eyes of any species. So think of your eye as a very geometric energy signature of light. And light and God are one. And light and God and true vision are one. But who is it that sees? You as divine witness, as the awareness, the consciousness behind the physical eyes that actually sees. So God is the very light in which we see. And we truly see and have the eyes to see when God alone is looking through our eyes. So God, light, vision, and your true self are identical. They're one and the same. There's a well-known statement in the Vedic scriptures that God, Guru, and your divine self are one and the same. So this is a good way to begin to look at light, God being light. And we go to one who is the light bearer, or who seemingly sees more clearly for a time, to be able to see more clearly ourselves. We as light workers want to become enlightened. But in truth, we've always been enlightened. The things I share in each seminar are things we all know. But we've lost awareness consciously of this deep inner wisdom. And we've done that because we've become distracted. Our attention has been grasped and attached to phenomenal things that we have made more real than that which is the reality behind and beyond and transcending the appearance. We've all done that. And I believe personally, we all did that on purpose so that in the very midst of the illusion and the darkness and the pain and the suffering, illusory though they may be, they certainly are experiential in terms of our perception. We awaken in the midst of all of that. And by awakening in the midst of it, we serve as saviors to all of the lower levels and kingdoms of consciousness by lifting them from the mire and the muck and the darkness into the light. And that's the transcendental service that every soul that comes clothed in this veil of illusion and skin, it's what we really are doing here. We are processors of darkness that flows through our life in various forms, and we seemingly suffer the brunt of this until we come to our senses and awaken. And we say, oh, I'm in this pig pen here eating pig slop. And I'm really a prince of the divine kingdom or a princess of the divine kingdom. But you catch my drift here. We come to ourselves either through great suffering and sorrow, or rarely is it from a position of comfort and satisfaction. It's like we have ample time, unlimited time really, in this game plan, to partake of everything the world has to offer and all of the sensual delights until we become sick of them all. We get surfeited at some point. You know, it's like you've been there, done there, bought the beanie, enough already. There's got to be more. But we all need to get to that place where we are fed up with the world. We have to partake of the world and eat it and consume it until we get to the point that we've had enough. The world can no longer satisfy us. There's a story in the Vedic teachings that really plays this point up very clearly. It's the mother who's going about her household chores and leaves the child alone because it's playing quietly. And as long as the child is playing quietly with its toys, the mother will go on and continue with what she has to do. But there comes a point when the child gets dissatisfied, starts to grumble a little bit. There's a little squeak here and there and a little kerfuffle, but the mother doesn't pay much attention to it because it realizes that that's probably going to pass. But then at some point, the child has just had it, and the child will not be comforted by anything but the attention and the embrace of the mother. And when that point is reached, every mother knows that her presence and her presence alone is going to calm the child and address the angst. And the divine mother, the divine father, God, is the same way with us. We, as souls, are allowed to play in the playground of life with all the many toys and baubles and distractions for as long as we want. And as long as we're happy and content and motivated and, you know, enthusiastic about our human lives and pursuing our romance and our wealth and our success and our whatevers, God lets us continue and do that without interfering, watching, and allowing, because the soul has to have experiences, all kinds of experiences. That's why we need more than one immersion in the physical envelope to be able to have every variety of experience. Otherwise, it would be totally unfair and unjust if we had only one try at it and we were either judged as successful or total failure. That would be a totally unjust program. And so, of course, we don't have that kind of a setup. We have repeated immersions in time, space, and various forms, various personas, various facades, various experiential arenas, so that we can sample and taste all of it for as long as we want, to our heart's content, until we've had it. And like that child, we're just hollering bloody murder for our mom, our divine mother, our divine beloved, to come and rescue us. And it's interesting because the masters that guard and govern the evolution of human soul through the educational arenas of many, many planetary systems, each life zone or planet that can house physicality, is a school of consciousness that souls matriculate through. You finish one lesson in one classroom or planet, and then you re-embody on another world, another planet, to have a different experience, until you finally make it to planet Earth, which I guess if you know by now, is the school of difficult endeavor. It's the school of hard knocks. It's the school where you're pulled back and forth between pairs of opposites. And you have to find that middle road that enables you to walk well, we won't say unscathed because we are scathed. We're totally scathed as we walk this path. But you do get to a point where you're able, through meditation and through self-inquiry, some form of spiritual practice, to be able to live just above the frenetic craziness of the lower dimensional points of identification. You learn to live above the emotional drama, the karma dramas, as I like to call them. You learn to live above that thinking mind that never leaves you alone. And you learn to live in the peace of God and the light of God and the pure bliss of God, which is just above all of those distractions. And the first step is to recognize that the reason that you're not happy is because you really don't see anything that has any meaning when you're looking at it through the ego's projections. And then at some point you need to realize that you alone have given meaning to the things that you see. Nothing has any significance other than what you personally have accorded it. As Sai Baba often says, God, if you say God, mud, if you say mud, yes, if you say yes, I also echo yes, no, if you say no, I also echo no. I am simply the witness. So God takes that position behind our eyeballs as the witness of the behavior of the little puppet in time and space, that little human doodad that gets all puffed up in its self-importance and struts about its time on the stage of life, thinking it's all, you know, in control of everything, and kind of prides itself on being in control of everything. That's the little dummy doll, the little puppet that gets pulled by the senses this way and that and dances to the karma dramas and the dreary drone of material immersions. But behind that, behind all of that, above all of that, transcendental to all of that, is that divine person that you are, that has never left the heart of God, that has never departed from home except in a brief nightmare of separation. That part of you that is eternal, whole, pure, innocent, that has never been affected by your immersion in time and space. The whole karma drama was simply an arena for testing and trying your metal as a divine master, as a divine self-realized and self-actualized person operating through the human body, but fully awake inside, like our elder brother Jesus was and is. That's the whole idea, is to live your life full on, enjoy it, participate, play the game, but don't believe that that game is what's going on. It's never what seems to be. There's always something else going on behind the facade. Be aware of that. Be aware that there's the great Oz, you know, behind that screen, and the Emerald City is just a little man playing an act. And that's what the let's say the full self, the ego self is that little puny Oz behind the curtain doing all the razzle dazzle, but it's all a big show. It means nothing. Because who and what you are and what you've come to seek has been with you always. You could never be deprived of your holiness, your divinity, your perfection, your purity. That is who and what you are eternally. So we give everything that we see the meaning that it has, but these thoughts really don't mean anything. We make a big deal out of our thoughts because we have tended to identify with our thoughts. We don't see them as simply a mind stream that we share with everyone. That's simply flowing. No, we think our thoughts are our own thoughts. And then we misidentify ourselves with what we think, or what we believe, or the labels we've placed on ourselves. And none of those things mean anything other than what we think they do. So we're upset, but we really don't know why we're upset. You know, you've met people who are angry, but they, you know, you ask them, why are you so angry? And they won't be able to tell you. Why are you so upset, or why did that push your button? And you're flying off the handle. What's going on? But they don't know. But the reason they're upset is because they see something that they've made real, but it's actually unreal. It's not even there. What are they seeing? You know what? They're seeing the past. They're projecting their past fears, their past miseries, their past woundedness. They're bleeding from the wounds of the past into the present moment. And wounded people are the ones that hurt and wound others. So until you address your own woundedness and come to peace with your past, forgive it, see past it, see beyond it, keep going, you're going to keep yourself upset. But who's doing that? You are, because you're dragging the past into the present, where it doesn't belong. When you do that, you deprive yourself of the future that could be totally unlike your past, but you're already projecting it into the future when you import it into your present moment. Because it's out of your present that you're creating your future, which doesn't exist until you step that next step, which then becomes your future. So the mind is preoccupied with all of these past thoughts, past interpretations, so that you never see anything as it truly is right now. You only see the past. And that's why you feel like your life doesn't have any meaning. And that's why you're upset, because unless you have given yourself a meaning that's truly meaningful, which would be truly part of the gaze of God illumining your mind, unless you do that, you're going to feel afraid. You're going to see the world as a very fearful place. And that makes you even more upset. And if you don't know that God did not create a meaningful world, a meaningless world, that's going to tend to make you depressed. So this is the place that many, many people find themselves in today. And the reason is that everything in the universe is conspiring to awaken you. And until you get to the point that you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you're going to stay in your comfort zone, even if it's a painful one, simply because it's familiar. And because you have become so invested in that as your reality that you won't let it go. You won't give any wiggle room to the true light of God to break through that dark prison that you've created around your life. So it's so very important to not try to medicate away your misery. It's time for you to sit in it and not try to avoid it. Take a Krishnamurti approach and just be the objective observer and just look at it. Just let it do its thing, whatever it is. But don't go running after it. Don't believe in it. Don't get suckered into it. Just watch it. Let's do a little exercise now that'll help you to be able to do that. You ready? Take a deep breath. And relax. And just gently close your eyes. And in your mind's eye, imagine a big full moon. And let it go. And just keep relaxing. Keep your eyes closed. And now imagine on the inner screen of your mind a serene, calm lake. And just let that go. And keep relaxing. Keep your eyes closed. And now bring into your mind a green meadow filled with wildflowers. And let that go. Now, who was seeing that? Who was the observer that was seeing those scenes? That was you. That was you as divine awareness. You weren't thinking. You were seeing. You were seeing. You were just present. And observing. And that's your objective observer. That's your witnessing self. You didn't have to do anything with the moon or the serene lake or the meadow with the wildflowers. You didn't have to judge it, critique it, doubt it, question it. You didn't have to do anything with it. You just let it arise in your awareness and you just watched it. And that's how we really can go through our life. When you need to think, to make plans, to address something, you take care of it in the moment and then you release it. But you don't allow that mind to inappropriately suggest things to you when the timing is not present for you to act on them. For example, it's not appropriate to worry about what you're going to do tomorrow or next week or whenever when you're getting ready to go to sleep at night. The only thing you need to do then is to focus on relaxing and bringing into your mind the most beautiful thoughts that you want to carry and marinate in during the night travel. Or you want to position yourself where you can be of the greatest service as you leave your body and travel in the other dimensions as a co-worker with God. You see, you do what needs to be done in the moment and then you let it go. Just like those lovely visions, you just let them go. Didn't worry about them. You weren't invested in doing anything with that. So you learn to discipline yourself to stay present with your process, whatever that is, here and now. And if you can't do anything with it, you let it go. You place it in the light. And the light of God will bring that forward in the perfect timing for you to do what you need to do with it. In that perfect timing, God, the light of God, will also give you the strength. Because the light within you is also your strength. So you're given the vision and the understanding, because light is also understanding. Light is also creative ability. So in the moment, the light presents the strength to do, the ability to do, the facilitation necessary to do, and then operates through you as the divine spirit to get the job done. And then you release it. Job done. Next. That's how you live above karma, above drama, above angst, and above worry and concern. Everything you need is here and now. If it isn't in your judgment, it's because you don't really need it. You just think you do. But everything you need to create the most magnificent future is right here and right now. It's at hand. You can reach out and grab it. It's present. And that's how you keep yourself free. Whenever you're not happy, you're looking at something that's not there and trying to make it real. Pay attention to those little waves of discontent. They're trying to wake you up to limitless joy, to limitless resting in the grace of God. When you flow and rest in the grace of God, you trust God to bring forward to you what you need when you need to be aware of it. You don't have to pre-think what to say or what to do or how to handle things long before they're ever on the horizon to be handled. That's how you waste your life, you waste your energy, and you deprive yourself of a truly joyous present moment in which everything is just filled with the love and the presence and the beauty and the vitality of God. That's the price you pay. That's what you rob yourself of when you cling to your past and try to drag it into your present moment. Now, the gaze of God is something so very powerful. I want to look at it a little bit. Because in the East and less westernized cultures, the power of the gaze is well known. In fact, in many countries you'll go and you'll find amulets and or amulets, not amulets, amulets to ward off the evil eye, or potions, you know, against whatever. But, and also in India, I thought it was interesting. You'll notice that babies and children often have a little black dot on their cheek. And the reason that a mother will put a black dot on a child's cheek is to somehow make that child seem less attractive or blemished, to ward off envy or the evil eye. So, you know, it's not really customary in India or maybe even in Asia to remark about, like we do in the West, oh, what a beautiful baby, or what a wonderful child. It's like, no, don't say that, you'll attract the evil eye. And these are superstitions that build up around the understanding of the power of gaze, of the gaze of a person. And for example, a Brahmin, if a person who's a non-Brahmin or a quote-unquote untouchable walks by their food or casts their shadow on their food or comes into the room where they're preparing their meal, they have to dump the whole meal and start over from scratch because the food is considered, blighted by that gaze of that person, that presence, that aura of that person. Which, you know, it gets to ridiculous lengths, these fences of protection and defense against whatever that the ego creates. And all of these superstitions are what the Course of Miracles would call magical thoughts. and these magical thoughts don't have any power any more than our belief in evil does, but the belief causes it to be experiential until we choose again and choose to see differently. I'll choose to really see rather than project fear and separation and negativity. So all of these practices seem really strange to us in America, but it's a real concern in many, many places in the world. But nevertheless, the gaze itself is something that's considered very powerful and significant. I think probably every culture, but in many, many of the more Asian cultures, looking directly at a person or into their eyes is often considered rude or intrusive, because actually you are inserting your soul force into that other person, or your ego agenda, whatever, depending on who's looking through those eyes. So that's why this concern about looking and being looked at is a big deal amongst many, many tribes and peoples throughout the world. In fact, even here, you know, if you come upon a person on a dark alley and you're looking at them, sometimes they'll say, hey, what are you looking at, man? You know, it'll provoke that ego's defensiveness sometimes if you're just innocently looking and not keeping your eyes averted. And you'll notice people that are in that ego state, they don't look you in the eyes. They keep their gaze averted very often. Being sincere and speaking from the heart and looking with loving and acceptance to another person is just about the antithesis of the way gang members, for example, operate, and the way that people who are very, very entrenched in their ego's vengeance and defense mechanisms, how they operate. So one of the very things that happens when you start to open up spiritually and you begin to truly see is that you begin to look at people with your eyes wide open and your heart open, and you're not expecting them to bludgeon you in the next dark corner. You're not really expecting anything but a loving welcome and response. Your whole approach to life begins to shift when that inner light begins to turn on. And it goes from a little spark to a flame, and then eventually a conflagration that takes over the whole body until you become an entire holy flame, holy effulgence. Not the kind of flame that burns, that's your transmutative flame, but the glory flame of the higher divine bodies of light, the glory body, see, Ananda Sharira, the bliss body begins to quicken, the Zohar body begins to activate, and you become something so glorious that you're called a whole light being, one of the Zoharim, one of the advanced ultra-dimensional beings that come and go at will. And that's our destiny. So why settle for tiddlywinks when you can be a whole light being and an effulgent presence, an effulgent cosmic individuality that sheds light and beauty and power and life to countless worlds. Yeah, countless worlds. We're looking at a big, 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 big destiny that we have been designed to fulfill, and a great, great, great mission that expands throughout the limitless creations yet to be born, yet to arise within the mind and sankalpa of God. Yeah, we're part of that. We're part of how God expresses through the many in this creative arena that we have. So I think that's a very, very powerful metaphor for us to look at here, because it's truth, it's actuality, it's more than a metaphor, it's a visual word image of what we are, what we truly are on a higher level already, and what we are awakening to down here in the human persona. So the energy coming from your eyes conveys your intention, and it actually leaves a subtle deposit upon whoever or whatever is looked upon. In the Agni Yoga series of teachings, which are very profound books that were transmitted to the great initiate Helena Rurik, her master, the Mahatma Maurya, had a great deal to share about the power of the gaze in these books published by the Agni Yoga Society. I remember one of the statements he made that's remained with me over the years when he said, "The chemism of the gaze is ineradicable." In other words, there's an actual composite of energy, particles that are precipitated upon subjects and things that are looked upon that are emitted from our eyes. And these leave a lasting imprint. This may be part of the psychometry when people can pick up an old object and actually read the owner's consciousness and intent. It's probably that chemism of the gaze that's been precipitated upon that object. Personally, I've never liked antiques or old objects for that very reason. I like to put my own energy on things rather than to, dwell with things that have been imprinted by other consciousnesses. It's an old, an old tendency that I've carried over for many, many lifetimes in India. But it's something that is worth our attention, our awareness, not hanging our hat on it, but just taking it in and being aware of how powerful the gaze is. And also I believe that the Master Maurya was referring more to people who have a very highly developed consciousness specifically, like an avatar or master. Now, to be seen or to see a great soul or avatar, that process of being looked at is called darshan, receiving the vision of the divine. And that gaze is called deva drishti, God sight or God vision. And it's also called tiwaja and twaji. These are Arabic terms that Ekankar and MSIA respectively have coined for that process. But it still refers to the gaze of God. And the gaze of a God-realized person can change one's entire life and destiny in a second. The gaze of an avatar can totally erase the worst-case scenario of karma if he or she so wills. The gaze of an avatar or God-realized person can cause addictive patterns to vanish. And every manner of disease can just totally disappear with a single glance of a true God-realized person. A divine avatar can also, get this is interesting, can also create life, conception, in a womb with a glance, so that a woman can conceive a child simply from the gaze of an avatar. And this is actually how what has been termed an immaculate conception occurs. You know, in the case of Jesus, for example, who was conceived in the womb of Mary by the Holy Spirit. And there are, you know, many other cases of a similar nature in the world scriptures. So there are stories of how the avatar Shirdi Sai Baba initiated, for example, a pregnancy in a 60-year-old woman. And later I heard a story of Satya Sai Baba, his next embodiment, that turned a cancerous tumor into a healthy baby. Here was a woman who comes to Satya Sai Baba to be healed of cancer and returns home pregnant and delivered a healthy baby instead. So Sai Baba has stated that divine power can transmute earth into sky and sky into earth, and that to doubt this is just to prove that we're too weak to grasp great things. So we need to be strong, spiritually strong, to grasp the greatness of what God would like to reveal to us. And we have to be ripened and ready. You got to get to that point when knowing God and realizing truth is more important to you than playing with the toys, you know, and the baubles of life. After you've realized, like, what's his name? Yogananda said, everything can wait. But my whatever he said, my realization of God cannot wait. God cannot wait. Everything else can wait, but God cannot wait. And when you get to that point, you're an old soul. You've been around the pike a few times, and now you're ready, finally, to make this either your last incarnation, or soon it will be your last incarnation. So, you know, when you graduate, you're finished, you're complete, you don't have to come back here again. You go on to a more advanced school and curriculum. So, that's why seekers the world over will go to such great lengths to travel all over the world to be in the presence of a great saint, a God-realized person. Because it's the power of the divine presence, however you experience it, that makes miracles happen and any transformation possible. You know, the presence makes you whole. Whether you're in a Benny Hinn healing crusade where the Holy Spirit's presence has been evoked and welcomed and worshipped and adored and called forward in such potency that miracles happen all over the auditorium. They're far away from Benny Hinn. He says he has nothing to do with it. He's as surprised as anybody else at the healings. But it's the presence. It's the divine presence. Same thing with Jesus. Wherever he walked, people couldn't stay sick. They couldn't stay demon-possessed. They couldn't stay dead. He was a life-giving spirit wherever he went. And that's what we're designed to be, life-bestowing spirits. That's our destiny. Jesus was just the divine matrix and blueprint for everything that we are also designedly imprinted and blueprinted to be and to manifest. Don't put him up there on a cross, or keep him in a diaper in a manger, or keep him up there in a cloud in heaven. Put him in the middle of your life and put on Christ. Put him on. Adorn yourself with that same anointing, that same empowerment. Fill yourself with that same divine spirit and go forth and bestow that through your gaze, through your touch, through your words, through your very presence, so that when you walk through the post office, that woman standing in line with cancer is healed and you don't even know it. And you go to that restaurant and sit down, and that waiter that's got a heart that's just breaking with grief, all of a sudden that pain and that despair lifts. And you thought you were just there to have a meal. And you don't know that happened. But your presence and that who was dwelling in you and looking through your eyes was the one that did the works. What a way to live, don't you think? What a mission. To just do life, do your dailies, whatever, and people are healed, transformed, the depression lifts, the whatever, the angst dissolves, the life is bettered and brightened. That person that was going to commit suicide just because you stood in their aura for 10 minutes all of a sudden decides, you know, maybe I won't do that after all. Maybe I'll go phone my friend and we'll go to the movies or whatever. You have no idea how powerful your presence when you are hosting the gaze of God through your eyes and you're presenting your true self through your instrument, your physical body. You've no idea what a miracle worker you are. And praise God that you're not aware so that your ego can't claim any of the glory. Let your works be silent. Let them be silent. Let the glory go to God. Don't worry. It's all on the Akashic record. One day, you will see, and all of those that were influenced by you will be there to give you their deepest loving appreciation. But don't get your glory here. Jesus said that if you get your glory here, then you've gotten your reward. But better that your reward is stored up in heaven, so your ego can't get a hold of it and start to corrupt it. Because the minute we start getting too big for our britches and start thinking that we are Almighty God on earth and the only avatar and the greatest master, we are setting ourselves up for a huge fall. Because nothing goes before the fall more prominently than pride and arrogance. That's why we need to be the workers, the miracle workers, and the divine instruments. But you don't look back. You don't evaluate whether you did anything or you didn't. You drop it just like you did the vision of the moon and the lake and the meadow. You just see it, drop it. See it, drop it. Move on. Next, next, next. And you'll notice when you don't have karma, very often you won't have memory either. You won't remember the good things you did because you, as an ego that would be watching that sort of thing, were not present. And when your high divine self is functioning through you, it leaves no tracks. It leaves no trail. The experience is consumed in the moment, so you don't carry it over as a memory that you can, gloat over to your own glory. It's very interesting how your actions are consumed in the fire of your divinity when all that is operating through you is your divinity. So the Vedic scriptures also declare that to have the vision of the divine, the darshan of God, a dream of God, whether you're sleeping or in a waking state, in a day vision or a night vision, or physically, are all one and the same. So those of you who have seen Jesus Christ in a dream, or Satya Sai Baba, or one of the other great masters in a dream, or a waking vision in meditation, that's the same as if you were physically with them. Because dream, deep sleep, and waking are the same in the highest truth. So those of you that have had these experiences, that's because of God's grace and your devotion that has caused that to happen. So this seeing of the divine is a real, real, real experience. And Sai Baba has said that such a divine encounter comes as a result of your ardent devotion, your desire to see God, your longing for God. Just like the mother is drawn to the sight of the child, when that longing just consumes you with a desperate need for the beloved, it's met with God's grace in the form of a divine encounter. And that hunger, that spiritual ardor, will always be met with a divine response. So let me ask you, what do you really want? Sai Baba says, I've come to give you what you want until you want what I've come to give, namely, liberation itself. And it's interesting to note that when we want only God, God fulfills the deepest desires of our heart. But then everything else, too, is added into the kit and caboodle. We get the whole shtick, the whole nine yards, the whole, everything, when all we want is God. But you know, it's so funny, because when you get to that state, you don't care. You have no real energy or interest or, gosh, I think even appreciation for all of that stuff, because by that time you're so absorbed in God that you're just floating in bliss, and you become less and less and less even aware of the body. You live above body consciousness and emotional consciousness and mental consciousness, and you live in and as the bliss of God, as a divine function that simply flows in response to genuine evocative need. You can tell when a person is evoking and calling you forward divinely, and when it's the braying of the ego that's just simply pestering, pestering you. Not that you see it as a pestering, but you see it as a discerning of true need as opposed to the squeaking of the squeaky wheel of the ego. You don't have to respond to the ego. You don't have to reward darkness with attention. You don't have to put energy of response into something that's just ugly and mean-spirited and negative. Then you increase the burden of that ego, and that soul is not served. So we best serve the soul of another by holding the vision of who they truly are, not the antics of the false self. That looks like tough love. That looks like insensitivity. That looks like ignoring somebody that seems apparently to be in pain. But you know what? Who you truly are is never in pain. It's only the ego that suffers and creates all these poor victim dramas. You don't have to pay any attention to that. The less attention you pay to falsehood, the more power and energy you have to allow the perfection of God to see through that situation and set that person free. If you can truly see that soul, that divinity, beyond and in spite of the antics of the false self, you set that soul free. That's how you become a liberator of consciousness. So when the ego is looking through the eyes, a person is considered spiritually asleep or blind or worse, dead. And these are the ones that Jesus spoke of when he said that having eyes, they were unable to see, and having ears, they were unable to hear. So until the heart is open, we can neither see nor hear, spiritually speaking. The ego is that conditioned bundle of fear, separation, and misery that we keep lugging around and attempting to either fix or escape. But trying to fix your ego is like taking old, run-over, bad, battered, ugly furniture and rearranging them in a filthy house. What is that going to do? Nothing. Set a match to the lot, buy a new home, and move in, pristine and clean. And that's what you do when you move into your higher spiritual awareness and move into the consciousness, which is the house, the home that you share eternally with God. So every unhappy, joyless state comes from that false ego self. Always. So the only way to stop the world and get off is to get to that point in life where you are willing to end your drama and really sincerely seek a higher way to look at life and to express and to open your heart. And when you get to the point that you can say, above all else, I want to see. I want to see through the gaze of God. I want God to see through me. And when you really want to awaken, to see things as they truly are, through God's eyes, you will see them as innocent, harmless, and wholly lovable and loving. That's what you'll see. So you can tell when you really want to see, because you will start to see. But it's interesting, the first thing that happens when you really start to see is that you're blinded by the light. It's like walking into a dark room, and gradually, as your eyes adjust, what you see is everything that suddenly the light has surfaced and reveals in that darkened room. And unless you have a good teacher, a good mentor, who can really help you to know that you're not that. Yeah, I know you're seeing it. I know you're feeling it. But you're not that. Until you know you're not that, you're likely to go into what's called the dark night of the soul. You're likely to go into some real psychological crises and real miseries simply because the light all of a sudden has turned on, and it's a little too bright, and so you're having to readjust everything in your life. So there's a real psychological process that goes along with awakening. And that's why we need satsang. We need the company of other men and women who are also awakening. We need to be anchored in a good spiritual meditative process every day, a spiritual practice. We need good and wise mentors who are themselves more advanced than we are on the path. Of course, ideally, we would have conscious contact with a truly enlightened person or being. But we will always have somebody at hand that meets our needs for the moment. And when you've outgrown that particular teacher, the next one will appear. So you're covered. Whatever level you are of spiritual inquiry, there will always be someone in your environment to mentor you. There will be an agent of your enlightenment, your destiny, that will encounter you and give you the next little piece of your divine puzzle. So it's always perfect. You're never ignored. It's impossible for the master not to appear when you're ready. But you have to know that the master can appear in any guise, any form, any place, any situation, and through any person. So no one is depriving you of seeing but yourself. So as long as you enjoy being right by making others wrong, or by blaming others instead of taking responsibility for your own situation, as long as you prefer conflict rather than the peace of God, you will continue depriving yourself of that, you know, greater life that's waiting for you to get tired of doing all that ego stuff. If it hurts another, it's hurting you. But you know what? You're the one that's going to be paying the price, not the person you're trying to hurt. Because whatever you have planned and intended to do to another to get even or to hurt or to ace them out, you've already done it to yourself. One day you'll learn there's only one of us here. There's not many. There's only one appearing as the many. So we learn to recognize when we're looking from our ego. And we learn to ignore that continual chatter mind that tries to figure everything out first, before it believes, before it does anything. That part that doubts, denies, judges, compares. Part that's cynical, sarcastic, and critical. You know, that joyless part is just the false ego mind. So we will learn how to look past all of that false evidence appearing as real. And when we do, we will see the face of the one beloved. And you know, when you're seeing truly because you've set yourself free. And we're never set free alone. The truth will always set you free, and the truth always is transferred to greater liberation to everyone. So the greatest thing you can do to set this world free from misery and pain and separation and warfare is to set yourself free, to realize that you are the holy child of God. Holy emanation of the gaze, the light, the purity, and the divinity of God. And that's eternal. You can't lose it. You can only lose sight of it temporarily. But you will awaken. It's inevitable. It's part of your destiny. So let's chant. Let's sing. Let's sing as a love song to God. The sweet, sweet tone of Anai Hu, which is another way of saying, I am you. Deep breath. It was a beautiful, beautiful mantra to sing because it's endemic in every single religious tradition. It's hidden in, usually there's secret inner circle teachings. So it's non-denominational, and it's not owned by any culture or religious bias. And as such, everyone can chant it. And it's the name of God that's usually remembered at the time of the Golden Age that we're just now starting to import onto this earth through you and me and those of us that choose to be the conduit for the case of God. God bless you, and God willing, I will be with you next week. Adonai.